today on Doomed. It is the final Doomed with Matt Binder of 2019. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. The year 2019 has come, and it is now about to be gone. We are broadcasting to you live on December 30th, New Year's Eve Eve. The decade, the 2010s. Where did it all go? Let me pull myself up on the camera here, folks. Today, it's just going to be me. There we go. All right, the camera took a second to just me on the show today. No guest, because I thought, you know, it's the last episode of the year. I have a few things I want to talk about with you guys. So let's do this. Let's just me, you, and the other couple thousand people who listen to this show, whether it be on the podcast or on the YouTube live stream or the Periscope stream or the very, very few people who watch it on Twitch and Facebook. I'm talking very few people who watch it on those two mediums. But can't be popular everywhere. folks, I want to start out this episode doing things in reverse. I want to thank all the patrons this year. I want to thank all of the patrons. Well, yeah, this year, I guess. I want to thank all of the patrons who gave to the show at the top of the program. And then at the end, you know, when some people have already heard their interview and they're all filled with doomed for the day and they're tuning out. No, you got to hear the people who support the show and make it possible. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. That's how you can support the show and join this list of names: Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew C, Andrew H, Angela, RER, Ben, Benji, Bobby M, Brosnan, BZ, Champagne Kami, Christine H, Colin R, Connor R, Cyber Snowstorm, Dan, Dan K, Dan M. Those are three separate Dans, by the way. Dank Uger, Dave K, David Z, Dragon Slayer, Eugene B, Fraz K, FTW All Day, Future MD, George A, Greg D, Grim, Ian Curtis J, Jack D, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Jeremy M, John B, John S, Jonathan B, Jonathan L, Joseph R, Joyce M, Justin S, Katie S, Katz, Kaushal, Laputin Machine. Is that really? All right. I skipped one. There we go. Lisa D. How could I skip one of the Lisas almost? Lisa H, Mark S, Matt Z, Max W, User Me, Melissa M, Mitch V, Michael B, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Danks, Nicole A, Namdenet, Null Style, Odeth, Qster, Ryan Left Is Best, Scott R, Sean H, Stephen R, Stephen S, Struggle Session, TM, Tamney G, Taylor M, Terrence R, Thaddeus A, This Is Not Pizza, Tina M, Todd K, Tom G, Tom M, Why That Thai Guy, Will P, Utopian, Zachary P, Zarin, and Zoe G. And I want to give a special shout out to one patron, actually, because I was looking over the patrons lately, and I was like, wow, you know, there's a lot of people who've been here since the beginning, but there's one person who's given more than everybody else. I'm not going to say how much, but that person deserves an extra shout out. And that person is Champagne Kami. There's been, like I said, people who've been around at the Patreon just as long, but no one's given as much as Champagne Kami. So, buddy, truthfully, thank you for supporting the show and making it possible. Everybody who I just read, thank you. Now, as it's the last show of the year, the last show of the decade, I thought, you know, we would do a first half of the show. I'll do a story that I wanted to talk about, and then I'll pose a question. Well, I'll pose the question now. What are you guys hoping to see in 2020? Obviously, with the theme of this show, I assume many people are going to, you know, what the show is all about. I'm going to assume many people are going to comment to me and say a Bernie Sanders winning the Democratic nomination. And I would probably put that number one on my list as well. But let me know in the comments if you're listening live. And then we'll go to the second half and we'll just have some fun with the patrons and the live streamers. You freebies, I'm not going to leave you behind for this one, but you could always become a patron and catch that patron-only half. So, let's talk about this YouTube study. I wrote about this study yesterday on Mashable. And you might have seen this study being talked about. You might have seen it got some attention on Twitter. You might have seen a lot of criticism of it, and rightfully so. So, if you know anything about YouTube and the politics, specifically the politics niche, I guess, all your favorite political YouTubers, all your least favorite political YouTubers, you know that there's been a real problem with the YouTube recommendation algorithm. And to give YouTube credit, this year, 2019, they actually stepped it up and did some tweaks, did some fixes to the algorithm. Is it perfect yet? Absolutely not. Has a lot of the damage over the past, 10 years already been done? Yes. But this is the year they got around to really, I would say, really dealing with the worst of the recommendation algorithm problem. I mean, at the very beginning of the year, they announced specifically they were working to make sure the algorithm pushes out less conspiratorial content. And let me actually take a step back. For those of you who may not know what I'm talking about, basically, YouTube has always had this problem with the recommendation algorithm. I mean, they coded it and they created it. And in theory, you think this is how it should work and everything would be fine. Basically, the algorithm sees the video you're watching, and it says, if you like this video, let me pull up some other videos in my YouTube, giant YouTube library in which people are literally uploading, millions upon millions of hours of YouTube content every hour of every day. Let me look through all this, and here's some more political content. You're looking at political content? You probably like more political content. You're going to want to watch more political content when this video is over. And when you watch a YouTube video, you see on the right-hand sidebar a bunch of YouTube videos that you could watch next. Now, the problem is that the algorithm worked a little bit too, I don't want to say well, but it had a habit of saying, for example, you're watching a Fox News clip. Why don't you check out some of these white supremacist YouTube channels? And, or here's some Alex Jones for you. And then before you know it, someone's watching Alex Jones and reading into all these conspiracy theories about how there's a, a pedophile ring under the basement, in the basement of a pizzeria in D.C. And you're falling in a wormhole, a rabbit hole is what it's called, of all these terrible conspiratorial YouTube channels. But, as someone who's just, I'm just viewing YouTube, I'm not all that political savvy, I'm just your average, human being who's not in these weird political bubbles, obsessively, compulsively, like you and me, reading into this stuff. So I see a YouTube video, and it's on YouTube, it must be telling me the truth. It must be at least someone's factual opinion based in facts and factual information. Of course, we now know that's not how this works. But so someone would find these channels and these videos, they'd like them, they'd subscribe to these channels, and before you know it, they're in this weird right-wing, white supremacist, conspiratorial bubble. And that's just one example. Obviously, one of the more worrisome examples. And so, first of all, critics would basically lay out to YouTube, listen, we get what the algorithm's supposed to do. And we get that you are an open platform, you're running your business this way, and you say, you know, this stuff, as long as they're abiding by our terms, and, you know, not breaking our website rules, they can espouse whatever opinion they want. These were the rules, at least, before YouTube, again, tweaked them a little bit, too. But then the critics posed the question, okay, this stuff's allowed to be on the platform. Why does your algorithm have to promote this stuff, though? Like, you can say that the insane person on the soapbox in the middle of a public square outside in the real world can scream his flat earth conspiracies all he wants and no one can stop him. But, you know, the local news channels don't have to head down to where he is in the public square and set up a, give him a 2-hour live program every night and put it on their channels and promote it with commercials during primetime television. So YouTube basically said, yeah, we agree with you on this stuff after many years of critics pushing them on this. And in 2019, they finally said, listen, the conspiratorial stuff, we're going to make sure our algorithm is smart enough not to recommend that stuff. You know, the 9/11 conspiracies, the flat earther stuff, the InfoWars style news stuff. We're going to allow it on our platform as long as they follow our rules, but we don't have to promote it via the algorithm. Thank you, YouTube. Yay. So, enough of the background. There's a lot more to, but that's the summary of the background. Fast forward to this study that came out this past week. So, these two researchers, let me pull up their names. They're just independent data scientist Mark Ledwich and a UC Berkeley researcher, Anna Zaitsev, released this study that's starting to get some attention after Ledwich starts promoting it on Twitter. And I should say this as an addendum up front that should give you an idea about the study and where we're going with this here. The other researcher, not Ledwich, Anna Zaitsev, the UC Berkeley researcher, she has since come out and said, you know, what Ledwich is saying on Twitter regarding what the study claims to have found, what he's saying on Twitter are the results of the study. I do not back what he's saying on Twitter. I simply back what's inside the data that I discovered inside the study. I'm not purporting that it says one thing or another. What I'm saying is this is what we found YouTube is pushing traffic to. So that should tell you enough. One of the researchers comes out and says, I need to back away from what the other my partner is saying on the internet. So let me read Ledwich's first couple of tweets. So Ledwich says, I work with Anna Zaitsev, Berkeley postdoc, to study YouTube recommendation radicalization. We painstakingly collected and grouped channels, 768 of them, and recommendations, 23 million of them, and found that the algo has a de-radicalizing influence. Now again, this flies in the face of everything I just said beforehand. Second tweet. It turns out the late 2019 algorithm actually destroys, and he puts this in all caps, conspiracy theorists, provocateurs, and white identitarians. Again, all those people I just said were the types that were being pushed on YouTube via the algorithm if someone just happened to watch one sort of Fox News video. And you want, even at worst, it would push that stuff if you just watched a political video, period, that was sort of more apolitical because, again, the right wing and this white supremacist stuff and this conspiratorial stuff was sort of running rampant on YouTube for a long period of time. It was the type of stuff that was just being uploaded, I don't know, more so than anything else. It was, you know, it was a real problem. He continues, The algorithm helps partisans and hurts almost everyone else. So I looked into this study. It's a 15-page long study. It's not too long, but it's a lot of information in there. And again, I found what a lot of people were saying about the study. It's deeply flawed. You know, some people have said that they welcome more of this data about the study and more people should look into the study, even though they don't agree with the study's findings. Other people have said, you know, it's not so much wrong as it is just incorrect in its methodology. My opinion is, and I say this in my write-up of it, there are bits and pieces of data in this study that are interesting. And in fact, some of it backed up some things I've been finding about YouTube and its new algorithm, especially pertaining to mainstream news outlets. But the data this study finds, you almost, I don't want to say throw out, but you really can't use it in any sense of the word and take it seriously when they're pushing findings that the data just doesn't find and back up. So let me go through what I found were the major problems with this study. First of all, the number one problem to me is that second tweet that Ledwich actually posted. He says, it turns out the late 2019 algorithm destroys conspiracy theorists, provocateurs, white identitarians, blah, 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 blah. Let me highlight again the relevant portion of his tweet. It turns out the late 2019 algorithm, yes, that's correct. Like I just said, YouTube has done a lot to correct the algorithm in 2019. So if you're judging YouTube's entire history of radicalization by this study, which is what he's trying to say by saying it actually de-radicalizes, and later on in a really bizarre portion, let me get to this other tweet that really, really sets it all up here. The final tweet in this thread is, my article, which he basically posted an article summarizing his study, takes aim at the New York Times, in particular Kevin Roos, who have been on a myth-filled crusade versus social media. We should start questioning the authoritative status of outlets that have soiled themselves with agendas. First of all, a researcher saying this type of stuff should be flags going up, red flags going up all over the place. Clearly, he has an agenda to prove others wrong with his study, which, I mean, a study sets out to find information and the data backs up whatever the findings just are backed up by the data, I should say. And, you know, they may be proved right, they may be proved wrong. But this guy looks like he was trying to prove a very specific idea he had. And again, a little background here, the Kevin Roos article that bothers him so much, apparently, in the New York Times, is the one where Kevin Roos basically talked to someone who was radicalized by the YouTube algorithm and then sort of was de-radicalized via just basically his own, I don't know, awakening, I guess you can say, through viewing videos from YouTubers on the left. And he came out and basically said, no, this is how he talked to Roos and said, this is how I fell into the YouTube rabbit hole and became a far right radical. So this person, Ledwich, who conducted this study, could have just basically said, this is how the algorithm now works, and presented his findings like that, but he's not trying to do that. He's basically trying to say, everything you know about YouTube radicalization is wrong. This study flies in the face of everything that you've heard before. I found it de-radicalizes people. it's just not correct. I mean, it's unfortunate because this could have been a good study, basically, if it was looking at, hey, this is how YouTube works now. This is the latest YouTube update. So then we get to this next part that really bothers me about the study. And I mentioned it in his framing of it. And that's the study is slanted. But I already said how he had an agenda. There's something in the study, though. The study's own methodology that basically makes the whole thing flawed, even the data. Like, he could take this study and frame it in a certain way through his opinion and through an article that he posted on his media. But the study itself claims this, and it's based on data that's incorrect. To find out how YouTube is now promoting different content types via the recommendation algorithm, the study groups YouTube channels in basically different niches. And there's like the social justice niche. There's the anti-SJW niche, which contains people like, you know, Sargon of Akkad and Tim Pool. I believe the social justice niche has like Peter Coffin in it. And now those are decent, you know, those are decent groupings there. But then we get to this. There's a category called partisan left. And in this category is the Young Turks. I agree with that. The Young Turks are clearly a partisan left independent media organization. They say so. I mean, Cenk Uygur, the host, the main Young Turk, is currently running for a House seat as a leftist candidate. They don't hide it. They're quite open with it. Also in the partisan left category, which again, helps the, once they get this data, they use these categories to determine how the YouTube algorithm is basically pushing people to different types of content. Along with the Young Turks in the partisan left category is CNN. CNN! I mean, come on. Come on. There's no one in their right state of mind who is not some hardcore right-wing partisan, who isn't a MAGA person, who isn't like a Ben Shapiro fan, who isn't like a Fox News obsessive, who thinks CNN is a partisan left news organization in the same category as the Young Turks. It's a joke. CNN is in a category along with like MSNBC and with the New York Times and the Washington Post as an establishment mainstream news outlet. They are major corporations or backed by major corporations or owned by major corporations. They are not the Young Turks. You know, it's even wrong to put them with an independent, you know, right-leaning outlet. Like, I don't know, the Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro's organization. It's just I want to say it's either A, just a total misunderstanding of the political sphere and the media sphere, or someone with a clear agenda. And I think I've told you where my opinion is based on one of the researchers' own opinionated breakdown of his findings. And let me explain to you too how the study itself defines partisan left, the group that CNN and Young Turks sit in together. exclusively critical of Republicans would agree with this statement. GOP policies are a threat to the well-being of the country. In what world do you put CNN in that category if that's your definition of partisan left? The organization employs more former Republican politicians and former former Trump cabinet members and administration members than, frankly, I would say any other news organization, I think. I would say they might even employ more than Fox, because Fox already has their established lineup of right-wing hosts and contributors. It was CNN who decided, hey, we got some all these fired Trump people. Let's hire them. We could get some ratings having these people on board. It's ludicrous. So the study's findings, I should point out, again, laid out by Ledwich, is that it destroys conspiracy theorists, provocateurs, and white identitarians, and helps partisans. Now, what I've seen with the new YouTube algorithm is that it's been pushing, and you can search any basic political keyword, like, you don't know, 2020 Democratic primary debates, Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump. Search any of those keywords. Joe Biden. And they will promote ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, any mainstream media outlet. It's, in my opinion, their way of correcting for the independent media channels like InfoWars and other conspiracy theory content that sometimes are more popular, I should say, than the mainstream media outlets on YouTube. So they overcorrected by having the algorithm push the mainstream media outlets over YouTubers. And of course, this hurts people like the Young Turks and the Majority Report and Secular Talk, Kyle Kulinski, and Humanist Report, and the Rational National, and all your other favorite left-wing commentators who provide leftist analysis, again, based in facts, though. So that's my view of the algorithm now. But if you're putting CNN in the partisan left category, then of course your study is going to end up saying, hey, it helps partisans. Again, not true. And this brings me to the other major issue. Well, actually, there's one more sort of connected to the grouping of the channels. One of the groupings of the channels is called simply Provocateurs. And in this grouping, well, first of all, let me explain to you the description of provocateur, and that's simply someone who takes any position looking for attention. Okay, so I guess, like, you know, a YouTube prankster, like a Logan Paul. Again, they're not political commentators, him and his brother, but they're someone who does whatever just for attention. So if this is who's in this category, the YouTube, the political YouTuber equivalent of that, then fine. The provocateur category, however, for the study, is Milo Yiannopoulos and Steven Crowder. It's unbelievable that you would consider them just like bipartisan provocateurs. It's just blatantly false. Those are two far-right YouTubers. If you want to call them just like comedians or shit posters or trolls or whatever for your study, fine. But they're not just unbiased, bipartisan provocateurs. They're clearly right wingers. And the fact that their YouTube channel, Steven Crowder, I think, has something like 4 or 5 million subscribers. He's one of the most popular political YouTubers, period. Even just not even talking about on the right. So if your study is just calling him provocateur, then it's not going to get everything, the analysis right. It's crazy that they would just, it's insanity. And then this is the final issue that I'm going to bring up here. Now, I saw other things here and there, and I've seen other critics bring up great points about this study. And we can talk about, we can do many shows on YouTube radicalization and the studies around it. And we will. I mean, this show has already done a number of them. But for this particular study, there was one other major flaw that just, like, you know, I was reading through it and I'm like, are you kidding me? And the thing is, this is even just like my analysis of looking at the results and saying like, oh, I'm reading through their methodology and this is why it's flawed. You know, like the other two reasons I gave you, like, you know, you could feign that, hey, I didn't know this about Crowder or Milo, or, you know, I legitimately thought that for, you know, looking at CNN content, I mean, it would be just bullshit and untrue, but the study can feign this sort of thing. But this is actually written in the study, this part. I'm going to read it to you verbatim from the study. One should note that the recommendations list provided to a user who has an account and who is logged into YouTube might differ from the list presented to this anonymous account. However, we do not believe that there is a drastic difference in the behavior of the algorithm. It would seem counterintuitive for YouTube to apply vastly different criteria for anonymous users and users who are logged into their accounts, especially considering how complex creating such a recommendation algorithm is in the first place. Hold on for me while I crack open a drink, because I'm going to need the energy that this soda gives me for this one. Are you kidding me? How do you just basically admit in your study as a researcher, a data scientist, conducting the study, saying straight up in the study, not my analysis, not anyone else's analysis of it, straight up this person is saying in the study that we do not fully understand how YouTube works. The recommendation list provided to a user who has an account and who is logged in should not show a drastic difference in the behavior of the recommendation algorithm from someone who has a fresh account or no account, not logged in at all. What? Do you not know how an algorithm, how algorithms basically work? Especially one called a recommendation algorithm. It uses what the user is viewing. It uses the search history of what a user has previously looked at and watched, the channels that logged in account is subscribed to formulate these recommendations, to formulate what a user sees when they open up the YouTube.com homepage. Everything about YouTube and the videos it recommends are different for every single user when they're logged in because it's based on their entire history. It's, how do you possibly say we do not believe that there's a drastic difference in the behavior of the algorithm, which means the study we conducted using an anonymous account, and I should stress that what this means in this instance, and they didn't fully go into it, but I'm assuming is they created a fresh account completely, which is the equivalent to being a logged out user. And I'm assuming being that they're highlighting the word anonymous, not just saying a fresh account, is that they created a new Google account, meaning YouTube didn't even have any information from the Google account that owns the YouTube account, because if you're a YouTuber, you know this, or if you're on YouTube frequently, you know this, your YouTube account is connected to your Google account. So if you're logged into your Gmail, your Google Drive, your Google Docs, whatever you use from Google, Google Photos. When you go to YouTube.com, you're already logged into your YouTube account. You don't have to re-log in on YouTube itself. You only have to do that if you're completely signed out of your Google account. So you have a completely fresh account, anonymous account, same as a logged out user. And you're conducting the study. And you're seeing just the mainstream media stuff being pushed, which I have told you from my own experience, my own looking into this, that the YouTube algorithm now promotes these accounts. And so you're doing this, and your study's based on this, and this is your findings, and you present this, and you say, hey, that's completely fine, doesn't matter, our methodology isn't flawed. This entire study can just be thrown out the window for this one reason. I mean, I had brought up the flaws. I wanted to give the study a real, you know, a vigorous sort of look over. And I told you my analysis of how it just looks at the 2019 algorithm and how it wrongly groups the categories. And I saved this for the end because I really wanted to show you that I really tried to give this study the benefit of the doubt. But this is just the methodology is flawed from the get-go. There's no way to conduct this study by looking at the recommendations through one single brand new, never before used YouTube account with no identifying data whatsoever, completely anonymous to YouTube. It just doesn't work like that. I mean, if you're watching right now or you're listening to the podcast, go to YouTube.com. Make sure you're signed into your Google account, your YouTube account. Go to YouTube.com. Look at just your homepage. You'll probably see videos from the channels you subscribe. You'll probably see videos from channels that are like the channels you subscribe to. You'll probably see videos based on what you've previously watched. You may see some videos that are just trending on YouTube overall, but that's YouTube's part of the homepage with a recommendation sidebar where they try to get you to watch something new that a lot of other people on YouTube are watching. But for the most part, it's completely based on your viewing habits and your channel subscription history. And now open a new browser window. Open it in incognito mode or whatever, private browsing mode, and go to YouTube.com. Compare the two homepages. They will not look anything alike. Maybe the one thing that they'll have in common are those few videos that YouTube pushes to you that are trending on YouTube overall with all of its users. Otherwise, you're going to see completely different videos and channels. It's unbelievable that you would try to push this. And as one expert said on Twitter, Arvind Narayan, and I should get him on the show. Narayanan, I should say. Excuse me. I should get him on the show. Actually, I should reach out to him. He said, I spent about a year studying YouTube radicalization with several students. We dismissed simplistic research designs, like the one in the paper, by about week two, and realized that the phenomenon results from the users, the algorithm, video creators adapting to each other. Let's not forget that the peddlers of extreme content adversarially navigate YouTube's algorithm, optimizing the clickbaitness of their YouTube thumbnails and titles, while reputable sources attempt to maintain some semblance of impartiality. None of this is modeled in the paper. After tussling with these complexities, my students and I ended up with nothing publishable because we realized there's no good way for external researchers to quantitatively study radicalization. I think YouTube can study it internally, but only in a very limited way. Basically, only YouTube has access to all the data needed to even do a study that even resembles an accurate one. And even then, he says, it's going to be limited because they can't run a study based on everyone's viewing habits. The recommendation algorithm is different for everyone. The only thing YouTube could do, which thankfully in 2019 they did, is say, hey, no matter what you watch, we can say this content and this content and this content shouldn't be pushed to people because it's just lies and disinformation and fake news and propaganda. So we shouldn't be in the business of saying, hey, you should watch this. And that's the only way they can filter that stuff out. And even then, it's a work in progress. Because like Narayanan said, these bad faith actors find ways to game the system. So, I just thought it was an interesting study to break down in the final episode of Doomed, because it sort of encapsulates what one of the main themes of this show has been throughout the whole year, looking into YouTube radicalization and online radicalization in general, but definitely the YouTube rabbit hole that turns basically disenfranchised young white men into white supremacists because they're basically fall through this rabbit hole and given a scapegoat. And we'll be talking about this sort of stuff a lot more in the year ahead. In fact, I don't want to give any names or information yet because we're finalizing the details, but probably in January, I'm going to have a really great guest who they themselves were in this rabbit hole of sorts. And they've been de-radicalized. And I think it's going to be a really great episode. I'm really looking forward to talking to this person. Folks, that is the end of the free show. That's the end of the free podcast, the last of the decade. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. Support this show. You could also, if you're watching on YouTube, give a one-off donation via Super Chats. Just go to youtube.com/Matt Binder. Click the little money sign that says show your support. I'll read your Super Chat up front, too. Support this show by going to iTunes, Google Play, subscribing at those places. Leave a review on iTunes, a star review, a written review. One person. Jump in there, please. At least one person jump in there and give me one last written review of the year. I'd love to see it. And how else can you support this show? I have no idea anymore. I have no clue. I have no idea. What else could you do? Patreon, iTunes. Oh, subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Matt Binder. Follow me on Twitter at Matt Binder. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook at those places. Follow me on TikTok too. I'm actually Matthew Binder. Matt spelled out, full name Matthew Binder on TikTok. For some reason, I can't. It doesn't look like there's a Matt Binder on TikTok. There's no user that comes up, but I can't get it for some reason. I don't know why. If you work for TikTok, help me get that username that no one else is using. Folks, have a happy new year. Thank you for all your support, whether you just subscribe to the podcast and listen to it, whether you just watch the live stream, whether you give to the Patreon, whether you do all of the above. The most important thing you do to support this show. Recommend it to your friends, your family, and tell your favorite podcasters, YouTubers, whatever. Whatever your favorite online personalities are, Tell them about the show. Tell them you want me on their show. Tell them to come on my show. I'm really looking forward to 2020. We got an election year, a big election year. We got the most progressive candidate, Bernie Sanders, doing really well right now. We got a Donald Trump who I think we're all just ready to take down in 2020. It's going to be quite the year. Thank you for all your support. See you next week. I'm acting on, I mean, it's the end of the year, but come on. Time is just a human construct, right? The world doesn't know that we're about to end 2019, 2020. The earth doesn't care about these numbers. See you next week, folks. Happy New Year. See you all next time on Doomed.